The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for Paris When It Sizzles from 1964. If you do not wish to have this movie spoilt, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Is it a sizzling, sexy, romantic romp? Or a fizzling, failing, frantic flop? We watched Paris When It Sizzles from 1964 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Podcast. This time checking out Paris When It Sizzles from 1964. I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend, co-host, and suggester of this movie.
Christian Fletcher. Thank you so much, Trevor. I thought if the suggester wasn't mentioned, I would add that in. So thank you for having that in my intro.
That's all good. It seems like a good time to sort of like, I suppose, point out who suggested the movie for those who have first, if this is your first podcast, we take turns suggesting movies that we then... They have less than stellar reputations that we then try to redeem. So that's what the Rufus Project is about. And what we do, though, is we don't try to force it. We try to do it honestly and openly. So if it's redeemable, it's redeemable. If it's not, it's not. That's basically how we go.
Definitely. And look, this is like I always go to a bit of a list when I'm talk when I suggest movies, and this is one that I sort of hadn't thought of until, you know, I'm a huge Audrey Hepburn fan, and this is always a title that does come up. And I suppose if you're going to look at, I suppose, bad movies or dubious movies by the actress, this seems like a perfect choice. So I'm probably just as surprised as you, Trevor, but I had actually gone in seeing this movie quite a lot of times since I was younger. But like we always say, you don't watch a movie until you've seen it with your Rufus Project hat on. Totally different experience. Or it's a lot of times it's me like 10 years down the track going, what was the younger Christian thinking? I used to like this movie. I'm not talking about Paris When It Sizzles. I'm talking about other movies we've done. And you just go, yeah. So it's good to be able to, I suppose, reflect on them and be a bit more critical, I suppose.
Absolutely. So anyway, moving on to the movie itself. If you haven't seen Paris When It Sizzles, I have a synopsis. The sprightly young assistant of a Hollywood screenwriter helps him over his writer's block by acting out his fantasies of possible plots. That's a rather dubious synopsis.
But still, a synopsis or a concept that I would read and go, and probably did read when I was younger and went, ooh, what a great idea for a movie. It was actually quite a hard film to find when I was younger. It was never available on VHS readily. But nowadays, like they do with a lot of films, they'll lump it in the Audrey Hepburn Golden Collection because Paramount Pictures owns it. And you go, are you trying to force a movie that probably wasn't that popular on people, you know? So nowadays it is kind of, sold alongside Breakfast at Tiffany's and Sabrina and other Audrey Hepburn classics. But whether it is, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess we're going to need to find out. Now, as with some of these older movies, some of our normal categories get a bit up in the air. First of all, I could not find any details of any awards of any sort for this movie at all. And when I went to the Turkey Trivia, where we talk turkey about the movie and trivia, let's just say, well, I mean, the IMDb rating, that's fine, 6.4 out of 10. I did find the budget of this movie being approximately $4 million, which I think was quite a lot for 1964. However, I can't find any box office info.
Yeah, no, I haven't been able to. I even consulted my little book of Audrey Hepburn movies. Yes, I own it. And there was nothing in there about that. So what would you say about four, I don't know, for some reason five, I'm thinking break even or possibly just under. It seems to ring a bell, but it wasn't a very popular film. And I was interested actually reading in that book that Audrey probably only did about 30 movies in her lifetime, but ranked this as her least favourite movie that she ever did. So I don't know if that's telling too much.
Well, I guess, again, we'll find out. I mean, with a bit of trivia, I've got here a statement from Audrey Hepburn's son, Sean, saying that this was her least favourite during the years as a star, despite the fact that she called it a joy to make. He wrote that it taught her a lesson, and quoting Audrey here, I guess, just because the film was easy to make doesn't mean it's going to be very good.
Definitely. And it was sort of a repairing of her previous co-star, William Holden, who she'd co-starred with in Sabrina, but and had a bit of a love affair with, I think, while she was even... Mm. Actually, no, before she was married. I was going, how bad was that? I was going to say she had it while she was married. So this was also... There was a bit of apprehension, I think, going into this project because they had this sort of previous history. And William Holden, by this stage, was a raging alcoholic. So I think he was very much method acting or very much typecast in this movie. I think it's quite scary what you're seeing on film in his acting and his behaviour is very much what he was like. Read a lot of stories about him, you know, falling over hedges and having to be, you know, wrangled into the studio because he'd turn up, you know, because he wasn't turning up and things like that. So there was a lot of problems going on behind the scenes. So is any wonder the movie got made at all?
Well, funny enough, I may the other two maybe bits of trivia that I've got may tie into that. Tony Curtis agreed to a guest role in the film as a favour to George Axelrod because William Holden was forced to alcoholic clinic in the middle of filming.
And apparently, I think they needed to do it to pad it out. And it's funny because you see sort of Tony, he's got more than sort of a cameo. He ends up sort of taking more of a supporting actor role in the movie. But yeah, it's quite strange. And as I say, even you mentioned George Axelrod, the he wrote the screenplay, I think it was. I've got Richard Axelrod, but I think it's George. And he actually wrote the screenplay for Breakfast at Tiffany's, which I believe was a fantastic adaptation. And you'll even notice, being a fan, there's quite a lot of references to her previous movies. I think she even wears one of the Breakfast at Tiffany's costumes at the very end of the movie, that pink outfit. So the whole way through, there's a lot of references. Creepily enough, a lot of references to movies that she didn't end up doing for about 10 years, like you know, when she's dressed as Maid Marian, she did Robin and Marian in the 70s. There's a lot of really creepy things where I'm going, it's almost, I don't know, art imitating life or vice versa.
Yeah, I did notice quite a few, I suppose, references. I mean, not being quite the Audrey file. It's just like, oh, yeah, oh, they mentioned Breakfast at Tiffany's. That was an Audrey Hepburn movie. Hey, I recognise something.
But, yeah, there's a few subliminal ones in there too. And I believe it was based on a 30s I think it was a 30s movie, a French film called Holiday for Henrietta, which I've never actually seen. So it'd be interesting to see if, I don't know, they missed the point completely or the original was in a very similar vein.
Maybe a bit of a mystery for a while. I don't know if I'm going to rush to see the 30s version. Now the last bit of trivia I have was regarding the rather strange thing they threw in there, the Dracula sequence, being one of the last ones to be completed for the film, end up being shortened because William Holden smashed his new Ferrari into a wall and wound up wearing a splint.
The fact that that scene's even in there at all is still quite strange, but it doesn't surprise me under the circumstances of how he was during filming. Mm. So
definitely, I mean, just seeing him on screen and when he's on screen, you can only imagine what it was like off screen. Okay, so that's basically it for the trivia that I found. Unless you had any other bits of goss you wanted to throw in?
No, probably the only other thing would be it's one of the other many films that Audrey Hepburn filmed in Paris. And you'll notice whenever she speaks French, she's quite articulate because she could speak fluent French. So I found pretty much in the 60s, pretty much all bar, I think, like one movie was filmed in France or Paris. So, so it's good to see a lot of those locations. And I think she'd just come off Charade with Cary Grant. And in the opening shots, how you'll see her, you know, she goes past that Punch and Judy stage and all those different things. Yeah, that's straight out of Charade. So I think she did that a lot because she had a house there and it was probably a lot easier to get to the studio.
I would say so. Plus, you know, I mean, who would want to film in Paris if you had the chance?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, before we talk too much about the movie itself, now, as I mentioned before, with the Griffiths Project, we aim to see if movies are, in fact, redeemable, which means we need to set a baseline to see what we're working from. So I had a poke around on Amazon, and I found this review. The title of this review is "Had to Poke Myself So I Wouldn't Fall Asleep." Love Audrey Hepburn and William Holden, but not this movie. Holden is a whiny writer who never shuts up, and Hepburn plays second fiddle to his kvetching. You have to listen to Holden as an insecure writer who can't come up with a decent plot, and I've honestly forgotten why the heck Hepburn's character was even there. I can see why this was never a major blockbuster. Yeesh! 1 star.
I think that deserves 5 stars for mentioning kvetching. Oh my gosh. Ladies and gentlemen, probably the first time that's been used on the podcast and probably the last.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if the term kvetching comes up again, but I think I may try to use it more often going forward.
Not that I want to jump ahead too much, because I know we look at better reviews at the tail end of the podcast, but I struggled to find bad reviews, because it seems very much now it's, I don't know, got a cult following, but it's very much become sort of an in-joke or an in sort of movie with movie buffs or filmmakers, I don't know. So good luck actually, I mean, well done actually finding a 1 star review.
Yeah, well, you mentioned about the whole, you know, being for movie buffs and moviegoers. I did notice, like, aside from the first thing being like it's an hour 40, which seems fairly lengthy for a movie from the 1960s, and the groovy daddy-o type music as we cut into the opening of a guy doing a movie pitch to Paramount Studios. I'm thinking, well, that went a bit meta very, very fast.
Oh, definitely. And that's the thing. And it's probably the first of many, because it sort of took me, like, obviously, I got the reference too, but you'll see probably more so at the later half of the movie where they just start to throw in the life imitating art or art, whatever the term is. And it starts to become almost too blatantly obvious. But I do like when they do little clever things like that. So it's very much felt very much like a Hollywood in-joke, and maybe one of the reasons for its failure was it was too Hollywoodized that it was rejected by the people that should have been the fans of it. I don't know, but I found it quite interesting. That very 60s opening pan of the Mediterranean, it seemed to be used in a lot of movies. And I don't know, Trevor, was he doing a crossword on the girl's back or writing a memo?
I don't know. I thought he was playing noughts and crosses.
Yeah, I was quite surprised. I didn't know what, like, you could tell for... You can't help but go, oh, some of this is so sexist with a lot of the stuff that does, especially when he, talks into her bosoms to take a memo. But at the same time, too, a lot of it was kind of clever in a really cheeky sort of way that they did it. But thankfully, that kind of sexual innuendo didn't continue too much. But I think the irony, the fact that it was Noel Coward playing the part, that there was quite a lot of irony involved, because he did show up a lot in some very camp 60s movies and always playing the same sort of role. So that was quite not expected.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I did notice that. I mean, they certainly lingered on his almost go-go girl style companions, attributes, shall we say, before fading over to our title with Paris When It Sizzles. And I mean, just in the opening credits alone, there was William Holden with one of those suntan mirrors, there was firecrackers, a Punch and Judy show, and I mean, all the stuff that we simply don't see anymore. It's just like, right from the outset, it's like, okay, this really sets the fact that this was a 60s movie.
But even so, it even had a lot of, probably I was thinking a lot more when they get to the hotel room and sort of, you know, as we see a lot of it set there, it felt even a lot older than that, almost kind of that feel of what, dare I say it, that they were trying to go for in At Long Last Love, trying to get kind of have that feel of sort of old MGM musicals or I don't know, it felt a lot older than 60s, but definitely I'm throwing in all those sort of French cliches, I suppose. But now, did you notice the perfume credit? It's been referenced in a lot of books I've read. I think it's even in the Raspberries as one of the not for as an award, but one of the strangest screen credits. There's even mention on screen for Givenchy, for the perfume worn by Audrey Hepburn for Givenchy. And it's off, as I said, often referenced as being the, one of the funniest screen credits ever used in a movie. I'm like, is this in Smell-O-Vision? Did I not get a scratch and sniff guard?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was certainly not really something you expect to, I suppose, experience from a movie from a 60s, as to a perfume.
Yeah, well, she was very, Givenchy and her were very synonymous, so she was probably her bit for, I don't know, give something back. But you mentioned seeing shots of William Holden as Richard Benson, but yeah, we mentioned earlier about him being, William Holden being a big drinker, but it was very much what we were established from day one, as this guy is pretty much a lazy drinker, and his lifestyle is pretty much established in those opening shots. And honestly, if you're in Paris, you'd have all those distractions. It'd be so hard to even write a screenplay in the first place.
Pretty much. And like when Audrey Hepburn does turn up, I mean, just straight up, it's all this quick fire dialogue that is just going nowhere. I was thinking, I was a bit worried just as I, at that point, because I think, as that reviewer said, I mean, I was finding William Holden a bit grating from very early on.
Mm-hmm.
And so much so that when they actually did sit down and they started writing the script that he was meant to have already written and just had to be typed out, but they hadn't been started at all. I mean, that first switch through to, you know, showing the action as he's dictating his script. And it was like, well, that's actually kind of fun.
And very much, and probably stepping ahead of sort of my overall thoughts, but very much ahead of its time. And I think that's what a lot of people have said in a few, like, good reviews for the movie, is that perhaps it was using a lot of techniques and those sort of film cliches, and perhaps it was quite ahead of its time. It almost had that feel of like not a Bond film, but like almost a spy film. And I'm not just talking about the plot that they end up doing as the film within the film, but yeah, it had a lot of those sort of that sort of style about it. And yeah, you mentioned very witty lines or those sort of one-liners coming in pretty much straight away. But yeah, the way the delivery of William Holden just felt like every line was him reading a line off a script. I don't. That's not me trying to be ironic. I don't know. It was just the delivery was just. It almost felt like they were both really just doing this for the paycheck. And well, from the sounds of it, William Holden was probably barely there, both mentally and physically. So, but yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And you almost couldn't wait for them to get into the reenactments. But that's another thing too, like probably confusing the listener at the moment, but yeah, we pretty much get dissolved into them acting out, I suppose, essentially the scenes. But I don't know, Trevor, I going into this movie, I kind of expected it was going to be a thing where, not that they dressed up and acted it out live in the hotel room, but kind of that. I wasn't expecting it to sort of literally dissolve to other scenes. And I don't know, it was a clever way of doing it, but not the way I expected them to have gone with it.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few moments where they did cut back, and it was almost like the script they were writing kind of blended in with what they were talking about. So there were a few scenes where they're just like sitting together or whatever, and they're talking about what they're doing. Like I quite like the one where in the movie they were going through and they had the William Holden in the movie they were writing ordering lunch, and it cuts back to him on the phone to room service. and it was just like, that was one of the ones where they were actually like animated and seemed to be caring as they were making the thing, and like they're both, you know, Audrey Hepburn's positively swooning over this room service order. And he holds the phone to her as she orders a bit herself, because you heard the lady. and just those overlaps.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, it, the thing where, I know I used this term before, and I think it's probably the best way to describe it, that when things do get kind of meta with the whole narrative.
And I think that's where they can get away with it, obviously being a lot crazier, because it's a lot of times, as we see, like they'll do 5 minutes of exposition and then go, oh, scrap that, and then the film rewinds, which I was, when they're in that scene at the Parisian, you know, it's Bastille Day, and all those, the spies arrive in the windows, and then they literally rewind the entire thing. Like, that probably would have been quite ahead of its time, or no one would have been doing things like that in movies at that time, unless possibly maybe Batman, the original Batman movie or something like that. But so little clever touches like that. But then I started to get to a stage where it then became quite confusing, and I found it really quite hard to keep up with the film within the film, because it was sort of getting away a lot from sort of the relationship between the two. Because I like what you said, yeah, it was very much sort of talking about what was happening between them, and like, as we find out at the end, they end up falling in love, but they could have built on that the whole way through the movie. But instead of just slapping that sort of on the end and making it sort of feel like, oh, we've grown to love each other.
Yeah, and we're going to do the movie thing.
Yeah, and that was confusing. Like, I'd love to say they have different names to call it, but I've literally got them written down here as Hotel Gabby and Rick and Movie Gabby and Rick. So, but yeah, it's very confusing like that. But I did like some of the things where, you know, one next thing they're doing a chase on a horse, and then I suppose, you know, that Dracula thing was quite unexpected. The next thing they're flying in a plane and all that kind of stuff. So it really was a chance for them to throw a whole heap of different sort of, I suppose, genres, all these movie genres in there. But I don't know. Unfortunately, it started to lose a lot of momentum. Like, you sort of started to lose interest or got confused in the plot within the plot. I don't know. And then it sort of got to a stage where I really welcomed the dialogue in the hotel room and the development between them. And then when it did cut back to the movie within the movie, it, I don't know, wasn't interesting me as much.
Right, yeah, because, yeah, I mean, it was definitely up and down on both sides of it. Like, there were the, when there was just witty banter back and forth between them in the hotel room without much else besides, that was kind of just like, get on with it. But then when they had the scenes where Gabriella and Richard develop their relationship, you know, you could see some chemistry between them. They weren't just bantering back and forth. And then on the whole movie side, the you could almost see the bits where this where the Audrey Hepburn character kind of had a bit more influence, because those seem to be a bit more alive and not just things happening.
And like I know, like you mentioned, yeah, the sort of chemistry developing in the hotel scenes. Probably, you know, they've got the part where they, you know, they do that dance routine to, I think, a Frank Sinatra song, and you know, there's that part where she, you know, at the end of the night where she goes off and pretty much when that goes from day one to day two and they go their separate ways, and she goes to her bedroom, and you know, those kind of breaks, I kind of welcomed those a lot. It would have been quite annoying if the entire movie was William Holden reciting how this script's gonna go. So I did welcome that a lot too. But I just found that I wasn't really enjoying the movie within the movie as much as I could have, because it was just, I think, very confusing, and it wasn't that I was being thick about it. I think I don't know. It seemed like a lot of times it was just an excuse for them all to wear a whole heap of different costumes. But God, I could tell Audrey Hepburn was loving it. And I actually really liked, I found she was getting into it a lot more when it was revealed that she was in with the spies, and she literally lets her hair down. Like that scene in the movie studio where they play Parcheesi and she has a bath. I don't know. I just felt that she was in her element in that scene, and I kind of wanted more scenes like that.
Yeah. I think it's safe to say that the person with the most character in this movie has got to be Audrey Hepburn, but I did like the whole thing, like with the romantic music and the musical number. I mean, there was so much of close-ups of Audrey Hepburn in time with what was being sung in the music, which I heard was actually a song from another Audrey Hepburn movie. And then William Holden just leans over, stops it suddenly, and just goes, pity this isn't a musical, and then you have to write it.
Well, it's funny because, yeah, there was a movie called Funny Face with Fred Astaire, where she danced with Fred Astaire. So even the dancing that they're doing is very similar to the routine they do in the 56 movie. So, yeah, another one of those clever things. But, yeah, and even in Funny Face, they do that thing where they do the extreme close-up of sort of her eyes and sort of the framing device that sort of William Holden was doing. They do that in a lot of her movies, actually. And actually, a bit of trivia, she fired at the first cinematographer because she said he zoomed in too much on her crooked teeth. And I looked at it and I'm like, love, not one... Apparently, it was the only time she was ever a diva was on this movie. I can understand why, I think. But yeah, so she actually wasn't happy with how she was filmed, fired the cinematographer and got a new one. But then you see the scenes of her teeth and go, they're perfect. But yeah, I can understand when you sort of got your face, you know, in close up like that. But yeah, it was a very common thing to use in her movies. But yeah, definitely. I did welcome, yeah, those sort of moments too. And definitely using the reference to Fred Astaire as well.
Yeah, but you just come back to what you mentioned, that Parcheesi game. Again, like, one of the things that really, I suppose, set the timing of this movie when it was made, when they have the thing in the movie studio where apparently Rick and Gabby are going to get romantic, and it cuts back to the back to the hotel room. He's going, oh, what about the censors? They won't like that. Because, oh, no, people can use their imagination. I like to imagine they're playing Parcheesi.
Because doesn't it something, because, you know, earlier Gabrielle comes and says, oh, she worked for a director once who said, oh, no, I think it was Scrabble. She's like, she worked for a New Wave director who, in the movie that, you know, they never played Scrabble, and what's it called? Oh, the Scrabble game will not take place. I was actually thinking, sorry, that there was Parcheesi was the reference, and that's why they brought it back again. But that was clever, because there was that whole bit about earlier about, you know, how the audience is conditioned to what a dissolve means, and then it starts it's funny all the things they kind of teach us early on about filmmaking they are then using themselves. So yeah, a lot of little clever things, and I actually think the movie probably needs a lot more credit than it gets for those sort of things, but unfortunately it's sort of bogged down by so much other stuff happening that you sort of don't see those clever touches as much.
Yeah, well, because when it does cut back to them in the hotel room after that, and you know, they actually do have a romantic scene, and they are starting to get a bit more intimate. It does exactly that. It does the dissolve and then comes back to them. And when they start writing again, they you know, just their voiceovers, you hear the thing, I can't write while you're doing that. Oh, Gabriella, I can't dictate when you're doing that. You know, just leaving it to your imagination, just like the gag he did earlier about the whole, you know, don't worry about the senses, you know, it'll be up to the imagination of the viewer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is the way that they when they did tie them together, it was clever.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate, I think, that the movie within the movie wasn't interesting enough to sort of sustain that or to keep up the momentum. I don't know. It could have been a lot cleverer. I don't know. Or could have been, like I said, actually, no, this could have been boring. I was going to say, like I said earlier, with them in the hotel room kind of acting it out rather than it dissolving to the film within a film, but I think that probably would have got quite boring or worn out quite fast. But, yeah, and, you know, and sort of things by the end, like I think it was sort of in the last scene we mentioned, like, Tony Curtis, like the whole running gag of, you're only the third policeman. Your name is insignificant. We do not care if you're Maurice or Philippe or whatever, even though by the end they kind of used that gag a bit too much. But a lot of those kind of jokes kept coming up and sort of definitely came to a head at the end, and you know, I loved the very rare times when they'd use text on the screen, you know, like when they do the final kiss at the end, it's like dot 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 kiss, and like in the opening part where they go such and such production, you know, and it's got all the credits come up and it's just got dot 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 some little person. Yeah.
some actor, some director.
Yeah, and I love, like, the girl who stole the Eiffel Tower, we'll use maybe Frank Sinatra, and then they use Frank Sinatra singing the theme song, you know, so very, yeah, very clever. And I think getting all those things thrown at us, sort of, not thrown at us, but given to us in the first 10 minutes and in a clever, probably quick way, it was never able to sort of maintain that momentum for an hour 40, I think.
Yeah, it really kind of relayed on, again, one of those situations where it makes a joke about a thing, but then does the thing anyway, which doesn't always work. Like, in this particular case, I mean, there were times when it did work, and other times it was just like, okay, you've done that joke again. Okay, can we get a new joke, please? I know you're going to do that joke again.
Yeah, yeah. And that, but I like, appreciate the little things. Like, did you notice? I'd never seen this, noticed this before, but in the vampire cave, all the test tubes are all the Bloody Mary ingredients because, you know, Richard drinks Bloody Marys the whole way through. little touches like that. And I go, oh, that's really clever. But yeah, as you said, a lot of stuff was replayed a lot, almost to the point of, actually, it was probably a lot in that scene, that first sort of segue scene where they're at that Parisian cafe. It's kind of, after a while, you sort of got to the point, yeah, we understand. And then, yeah, when they're giving you sort of 5 or 10 minutes worth of building up all this spy stuff just to rewind it and move on, you go, oh, okay. You could have probably gone a different, you know, idea, but it was kind of like giving us an insight into how the movie's actually going to go and sort of conditioning us to it, I think. But
I think so. But like, as you mentioned, like with the whole movie within a movie, that's like another thing that I think was an example of a longer game gag, which I was surprised that they tried to pull off, because we end up at the plot of the movie within the movie, in that William Holden's Rick character is stealing all the prints and all the negatives of a big movie that's about to come out so he can blackmail the director, and the director goes, oh no, that movie's terrible, please take it, here, if you promise to destroy it, you can have everything you want and I'll split the insurance money with you. And then that leads into William Holden getting his final script, which he's meant to hand over to Noel Coward, the director, and he's just there going, he basically just goes, oh, this script is all. I think he even ends up throwing it into like a fireworks display or something later on the movie. So it's like, oh, we're making this movie about destroying a bad movie, but he realizes that the script for it is a bad movie. So it's like, okay, how many layers do you want to put in this? Because this is not something you'd normally expect from a movie from this time.
Oh, definitely. Like, it was clever, but at the same time, too, I felt like the end of the movie undid so much stuff. Like, that party scene, like, it is almost like, I know you said it was clever how, you know, it ends up being quite meta, but I think you start to go where he goes, oh, that movie was terrible, I don't care about it anymore. You just think to yourself, we've sat through an hour and a half of him essentially trying to write this thing just for it to be thrown out the window. And yeah, just sort of, it just felt like maybe for the last hour 40 you really were just giving us an education how to make a movie. but again that final scene just filled, where they had that party in the Eiffel Tower, just felt very thrown together, especially when you've got, like, you know, they've thrown in every possible movie cliche they possibly could. That was Audrey Hepburn's husband, actually, that turns into the werewolf. He was a very controlling man, so he probably said, you cannot do that movie unless I'm in it. But yeah, so I sort of felt that it was more an excuse just for them to sort of dress up. But I do like the references at the end to Casablanca, where they run out to the aeroplane and he gets shot. And I think even they say, we won't make it to Casablanca, just to reiterate the other really obvious thing about it. But yeah, I found when they all just sort of want to throw it in the bin and move on. But I think the whole idea of it's more sort of, he should have fallen in love with her. Whereas I really liked that part where they sort of had that big, where she has that final speech with Rick about, you know, this, you know, Rick the character, which she's actually referring to the Rick the guy, but, you know, he just wanted to be loved. I've fallen in love with this guy, blah, blah, blah. And I really liked that sort of part, but then he kind of just sort of discounts it and she's like, okay, I'm just going to go off with my other Bastille date, but I'll leave my bird for you to bring for me.
Yeah, which he then turns into the whole, you know, I've seen this cliche before. And it's more of those cliche gags. It's like, you know, the girl leaves something important behind to make the man who apparently wasn't interested in her realize and come find her. And again, just going through the whole things, oh, you know, it's all cliche, but we're going to do it anyway.
And it's like he happens to see her at a Parisian bar, which reiterates that sort of earlier scene in the film within a film. And then he meets the date Maurice or Philippe, and there's still even that gag about getting his name wrong. But then she doesn't seem very, is it William Holden that ends up punching him in the face? Which is weird. If I was Maurice, I would have wanted to punch him in the face because he stole my date. But anyway, next thing, they've got the scene where, reiterating early on, where, you know, he gets punched and they start a riot and they run off. And there's that really weird moment where that ice cream lands on in that woman's top and she just goes, ooh, and it goes down her top. Did you notice that? I'm like, this is strange. Just end this movie already. The last 5 minutes was just like, come on.
But that's exactly what it was. It was just like, okay, we're in this thing. I'm an obnoxious American in Paris. What's the cliche thing for an American do? Throw a punch and start a riot. Oh, look, there's somebody going through the drum of the band. Here's every cliche in this fight scene, including two kids just sitting there watching it, and then they just start pushing each other over. And you're going, okay, you've made the joke about this, and now about how cliche all this is, and now you're doing it. So William Holden and Audrey Hepburn can run off and kiss, be romantic.
Kiss at a waterfall or fountain, sorry. Yes.
Yeah. By a fountain with some fireworks and and then dot 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 they kiss, the end. And that was literally the end.
Oh, good old Paramount. Paramount movies, probably up until the early 70s, ended with the logo and probably the end on the screen and never had credits. So I must admit it was probably good we didn't have to worry about those this time.
Well, I mean, these movies really had their credits front-loaded.
Oh, definitely. Back in these days, yes. Much different to how they are nowadays.
Oh, yes.
I don't think audiences would quite know what to do with themselves now.
If they tried to front-load the credits now, you'd be there 10 minutes before the movie even started. I mean...
And they couldn't have, some stingers at the end.
Very, very true. Well, we've gotten through this movie, Christian.
We feel like we were writing a film within a film there, I think, jumping all over the place. So, but yes, we did seem to get through it, so it's one of those kind of movies.
Yeah, well, when you think about it, not a lot actually happened.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was like. And I think it was one of those movies that was so... It felt like so much was happening in that first bit. That you could, as I kept saying, couldn't quite maintain that momentum.
Yeah. Oh, well, I guess we should move on with our thoughts about this movie then. So you did suggest it, Christian. So I shall go first this time. As to my thoughts on Paris When It Sizzles from 1964. Now, like I said, it was definitely grating at the start. The quick, clever, in air quotes, dialogue was getting on my nerves super duper quick. But then, it picked up once I started doing the movie in the movie stuff. And that was really a setup that let them put in whatever they wanted to put in that movie, whether it made sense or not. Like the whole drunken ramble about Rick in the movie being a vampire, you know. It was just put in there because, oh, Audrey's drunk. We can make her say whatever we want right now. There was too much of the, oh, you can't do that sort of scene, backed up by them doing exactly what they said shouldn't be done. And add to that all the gags about the cliches, and it really got overworked with both the movie within the movie and the hotel room stuff. But look, overall, it was a fun little romp. And even though it wasn't quite fourth wall breaking, it came pretty close to that sort of experience, which I think would have been really fresh and ahead of its time back in 1964. I can't imagine any other movie from this time getting quite so meta. Look, I'm not going to rush back to this movie, but I liked it enough, so I'm going to have to say it's redeemable.
Well, I was interested to see how it would fall, actually. And look, I've gone into this, as I said, I've watched this movie quite a lot in the past, and I think it's funny, when I watched it again today in preparation, it reminded me again, every time I have watched this, it's never been able, I keep mentioning this, it's never able to keep up its momentum. It's got such a great premise, like even that plot summary had me intrigued, you know, but unfortunately it just runs out of steam quite quickly. But perhaps it was too ahead of its time style-wise. And I think, as you said, imagine what audiences would have thought when they first saw this. I think they probably just wanted to see a romantic movie between these two leads, but instead would, you know, deviated with anything can happen. You know, as we said, next thing they're on a horse, next thing they're flying in a plane. But I actually did prefer the scenes in the hotel. Probably not the early ones, like we mentioned, because they were quite grating, especially when you just like get into it. I want to see what this movie's going to be. But I did like sort of the scenes and them sort of getting to know each other. And I kind of would have preferred more of that than a lot of the sort of the, I don't know, plot that ends up just being deleted anyway for the movie within a movie. It was so full of movie cliches and a lot of elements of the spy genre I felt coming through a lot. Very James Bondy, but obviously in a real sort of more in a Peter Sellers Casino Royale sort of way. For its daringness, concept and probably visual style, it definitely gets points. And I actually think this would be probably a movie possibly that could be studied by film students. There'd be something that could be got out of it in that respect. But Trevor, I was very torn as well. And I thought, look, I didn't despise it enough to call it a redeemable. So yeah, I think it's actually a redeemable movie, but definitely nowhere near up with one of Audrey's best, but ahead of its time and you know, worthy of a viewing, say every 5 or 10 years. For me, maybe.
Fair enough. There we go. Paris When It Sizzles from 1964 is redeemable. Wow.
Well.
And we almost don't need our last little bit, but, you know, as we do, we do like to finish off these on a high note. So whether we redeem the movie or not, I like to finish with another review from someone who's a much bigger fan. So I went back to Amazon and I dug this one up. It's a little bit long, but I think it really covers it over. The title of this review is, I think they made this movie just so people could see more of Audrey Hepburn. Audrey Hepburn is gorgeous in Paris When It Sizzles. The camera seems to have a magnet that just keeps being drawn to her face. In fact, in one section, there's a super fine close-up of her face as William Holden's character describes her eyes, her smile, etc. I think that may have been the real reason for this movie. Other than Audrey Hepburn's beauty and charm, this may have been the silliest movie I've ever seen in my life. Not particularly funny, although I did laugh at times, but slapstick kind of silly. Not usually my cup of tea, however, anything with Audrey Hepburn in it can't be bad. There are a couple of side comments about other Hepburn movies. They mentioned My Fair Lady and Breakfast at Tiffany's and probably others, all done very mischievously, as if the viewer were in on the joke. The Givenchy clothes Audrey Hepburn wore were stunning. I kept wondering how we lost all of the elegance that some people had in the movies back when this was made. This was a beautiful movie. Audrey Hepburn, locations, clothing, but a little too silly even for a lifelong Audrey Hepburn fan. I'm glad I watched it though. Somehow I had missed this one. 5 stars.
Well, they sound like a big Audrey Hepburn fan to start with.
I think they're all about the Audrey.
Yeah, exactly. Because I actually found that because Givenchy did a lot of her dresses, I actually found that the costuming in Paris When It Sizzles to be quite plain in comparison to a lot of the other movies she'd done. So maybe I'm just, maybe I'm just no fashion expert.
Yeah, I couldn't really judge. I thought, oh, she looks quite elegantly dressed. That's... As far as I'm familiar with Audrey Hepburn, that's pretty much the standard.
Yeah, pretty much.
There we go. So, Paris When It Sizzles, redeemed. I always feel good when I get to say that.
Oh, definitely. Now, Trevor, where can it go from here? No pressure.
No pressure at all. So, look, after the last few movies, because we've been going a fair way back lately, I figured it was time to do something a bit more recent and also something that's a little topical at the moment. There has been some recent entertainment news that brought this movie back into the limelight due to who has been lined up to write and possibly direct the next one. I'm saying the next one because apparently this movie is going to be pretty much disregarded in the new version. This actually did fairly well at the box office, but was critically panned and seems to be one of those movies that is divisive amongst watchers. And rather famously, or even infamously, it even won an Oscar. But not for, you know, acting or story or anything like that. So the news is that James Gunn, ex-Guardians of the Galaxy director, has been hired by another studio and is looking after the follow-up to the 2016 DC movie Suicide Squad.
Aha. So, was going to say, so we're watching the 2016 Suicide Squad, just to reiterate.
Yes, indeed, we are. We're going there, even though Jared Leto has...
I have actually seen the movie. I actually, believe it or not, went to a fancy dress party as Harley Quinn. Because, as you do. Actually, yeah, that's right. I think I've hidden the photos, but I think you asked me once before for them. But,
I must see these photos.
And I actually watched the movie for inspiration. But yes, I think I ended up watching the... I might have fast-forwarded most of it, but I believe there's a long cut. I think I saw an hour and a half version or a 2 hour. Apparently, there's a longer version that's since been... I'm not sure, so, but I'll be interested to watch it with the Rufus Project hat on.
Absolutely. So, look, if anybody out there wants to watch Suicide Squad from 2016 before our next podcast, I've had a little dig around, and it is available to rent or buy, this is in Australia, on Google Play, Apple iTunes, YouTube, Sony, Microsoft, and QuickFlix. Which I thought was actually long gone, to be honest, but apparently is still around.
Yeah, I remember you used to get promo things for them all the time. I didn't think they still existed.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, well, definitely. I think we needed to get back into a bit more of a modern and especially a comic adaptation. But so, yeah, so they are remaking Suicide Squad at the moment, but ignoring the first film, are they?
Pretty much. I'm guessing... like Harley Quinn and Margot Robbie would probably be coming back because everyone seems to think that was the only thing about the Suicide Squad movie.
And from memory, it pretty much was. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The last time we did one of these DC movies, it didn't go too well with the good old Batman v Superman.
No. Still too soon to remind me about that.
if anybody who hasn't seen it, go see Teen Titans Go to the Movies. One of the main reasons is for their take on that whole Martha scene from Batman.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's such a good movie. Sorry, I don't want to wax too much about that one, but let's say there is no need for that movie to ever appear on this podcast.
It's actually interesting. I've heard some very similar things said as well, so good to hear that's a good movie.
Oh, it's so, so good. Anyway, if you have anything to say about Suicide Squad, redeemable or otherwise, if you want to have your say about Paris when it sizzles, were we too generous? Were we too harsh? Let us know. If you have any movies that you think we should look at that we may not have thought of, we'd have to hear about that as well. So you can get in touch with us by heading to our homepage, RufusProject.com, and leaving a comment below this very episode. You can find the Rufus Project on YouTube, again, with our videos. You can leave the comments on there. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, or you can send us an email to podcast@RufusProject.com. We would love to hear from you.
Definitely lots of options there, and we always welcome some suggestions for movies, because I think even the amount we've done, we've still only just scraped to the top of the surface.
Oh, it's such a deep, dark pit.
And just when you think you've forgotten about it, and then someone will suggest something, you're like, oh no, we haven't done that.
We do have a couple of requests sitting in the background that I do intend to get to when it seems to be like a good time for it. So if you have made a request, we haven't forgotten about you. We're just waiting for, I suppose, the best times to do it.
Definitely. Maybe a time when we feel like we need to redeem it. We haven't had a redeemable movie for a while.
I don't know.
That
know
could go either way, though.
So I was like, we'll try. And speaking of movies that may be a lot easier to enjoy than some of the ones on our movies we've attempted list, oh boy, check that out sometime, guys. Wow. Christian, I believe you've got some very cool movies that people can watch if they want to head off to one of your events.
Yes, definitely. So as we're winding up sort of to the end of the year, believe it or not, I say winding up, but with November and December, we've still got some great cult movies coming up. We've got Office Space, finally. Tank Girl, Showgirls. Actually, Tank Girl might be a good movie to look at one time. Again. But I was going to say, Desperately Seeking Susan, that's on the 30th of November. And we've also got Princess Bride, Dirty Dancing, Cabin in the Woods, Reservoir Dogs are all coming back again. And I was going to say we've got some more dance parties, but no more for the rest of the year. We do have Comedy Commentary Cinema coming up, and we're doing the 1980 film Galaxy, you know, with Tim Burns, who we've had on the show before, and we have a live comedian duo do that. So it's always great to see a bad movie with people talking over. It's a kind of what we do, but we talk after the movie. I don't know. We could probably try this sometime. So there's plenty of things coming up. So head to christianfletcher.com or Christian Fletcher Events on Facebook for details.
Absolutely. I am hoping to actually get to that Office Space screening. I'm going to do my best because I love that movie.
I've never screened it and I've always wanted to, so I'm glad I can finally get the rights.
Now, if you want to check out some other stuff, we do have a sister podcast, What the History, which I do with my wife Susie. We just recently released our second birthday episode. Trust a history podcast to remember its birthday, because I know we never remember the birthday on this one. And that's where we've gone back through the last 12 months and picked out some of our favorite bits of bizarre history that have been discussed in that podcast. But you can find that over at wthpod.rufusproject.com or on that YouTube channel as well. And I know I keep promising it. I know I've been slack. There will be more stuff coming to the YouTube channel as soon as possible. I just need to get some life stuff out of the way. Damn you, life stuff!
Oh. It'll be coming soon, I'm sure.
Need spare time again. I don't remember
spare time. No spare time when you got podcasts.
Oh, no, no. Most of my spare time is making sure I've got time to do this.
And as we say, Trevor, even if the movies aren't any good, the chat always is. But in the case tonight, we got the double jackpot.
Oh, yes. Oh, it feels so good. Feels so good.
I honestly didn't think when I suggested this movie that it would be a redeemable one. So I'm probably just as shocked as you are.
Yeah, I must admit, I was dubious. But, you know, always got to make sure you go in with an open mind with that Rufus Project hat on.
Definitely. And, yeah, we're looking forward to Suicide Squad, but I might not be saying that next time after I've seen it. So.
We shall see. So, yeah, we will be back in a couple of weeks' time to work out if we can indeed redeem Suicide Squad from 2016. Why do I do this to myself? Oh, sorry. Open mind. And, yeah, we will definitely catch you then. So, farewell.
Gentlemen, ladies, what if Superman had decided to fly down, rip off the roof of the White House, grab the president right out of the Oval Office? Who would have stopped him?
I want to build a team of some very bad people who I think can do some good.
Y'all jokers must be crazy. I'm not just one of y'all many
toys. What? Tell
me what to do. This is the deal. You disobey me, you die. Try to escape, you die.
You got a boyfriend?
You irritate or vex me.
I'm known to be quite vexing. I'm just forewarning you.
You die.
If they get caught, we throw them under the bus. Don't tie me down, 'cause I
never stay. What a ride!
Let's play!
Come on, got some better to do? Let's
go! Light it up!
I love this guy.
Not good.
Don't forget, we're the bad guys.
Are you sweet talking me? All of that chit chat's gonna get you hurt.
The back is ready to crack as he raises his hands to the sky. And the girl in the car is everyone's fun. She can hit you with a wink of her eye.
You want to see something?
Yeah, I want to see something.
Yes, I want to see something.
I was just trying to get you there. No hard feelings, right? We good.
What you having?
Beer.
Whiskey.
What am I, 12?
How about you, hot stuff?
Water.
That's a good idea, honey.
It's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. IMDb says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.